Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's Wednesday. It's time for the Dakota Political Junkies to convene. Let's welcome Seth Tupper with the Rapid City Journal to the program. Seth, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And Roger Whittle, Watertown Public Opinion. Roger, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here, Lori.
All right, let's start with South Dakota State Representative Craig Teason died in a kayaking accident while he was on vacation in the Cook Islands. And Seth, there's just been an outpouring of comments and sorrow about this death. Let's start with you and give me an idea. Who was he and how influential was he in state politics in South Dakota?
Yeah, well, especially here in the Rapid City community in the Black Hills, he was very influential, very respected, was a Rapid City police officer and then was a Rapid City police chief. And then, of course, most recently served in the legislature, and he was on, a variety of other local boards and committees. I covered him on the Black Hills National Forest Advisory Board. And, the thing I wanted to say about Craig Teason is that, so many times when a public figure dies, there's this great rush to say something nice about the person. And a lot of times we wonder, are all those nice things that are being said, are they genuine, or are people just saying, what they think they ought to say and being polite? Well, in the case of Craig Teason, I can tell you with certainty that every nice thing that's being said about him, every laudatory thing that's being said about him is heartfelt and genuine. I don't know in all of my years of journalism if I ever covered anybody at any level, state, local, or national, that was more, universally respected than Craig Teason. And, it wasn't that everybody agreed with him. I mean, he was accused. I heard, people that are very conservative out here politically have accused him of being a quote-unquote rhino, Republican in name only. But even as they made those accusations, there was still a base level of respect. And because people just, as a public figure, people respected his integrity, his maturity, his level-headedness, and just his approach to problem-solving and the way he treated people. So it's been a real gut punch to a lot of people to so suddenly have lost this vibrant community leader that we've had with us for so long.
Roger, that does sound like a unique situation where someone is universally respected, even if you don't agree, with something that he's doing or a point of view. What do you want to say about Craig Teason and really how he did business in South Dakota?
Well, I wasn't that familiar with him. In fact, I learned more just listening to Seth just now than I knew before, but My initial reaction is, what a shame that the state and politics and the world in general, it seems like it needs more people like Craig Teason and not fewer.
Is there a legacy, Seth? Do you see other people, it's kind of a silly question in some ways, but, do people take the way he did business, the way he talked to people, the way he treated people, and do they say, we need more of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is a legacy and a real lasting one. I've had other legislators tell me, and I've seen other people say that they do try to model themselves after Craig Teason, and that they've tried to do that, obviously in years past, and that was something they were already doing. So I think there is a legacy in that when people think of what's the right way to conduct yourself as a legislator, as a politician, as a community leader, whatever your views are, set that aside, in your politics, what's the right demeanor to have and the right way to treat people? I think people for a long time will think about emulating Craig Teason and the way he conducted himself as a public official.
What happens next, Seth, for District 34? How is he replaced then?
Well, that'll be an appointment by the governor. And, of course, there hasn't been a lot of talk about that lately. People are still getting over the shock of the situation. But the governor's budget address is bearing down on us in December, and of course the legislative session will start in January, so there will be a decision that will have to be made there fairly soon, I would imagine.
Roger, let's transition a little bit, or a lot really, to something that's not so polite, and let's talk about sexual harassment and charges brought by a lawmaker. I'm sorry, by a lobbyist against Gene Abdallah. Can you give us the update on that?
Yeah, this lobbyist believe your name is Campbell, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Accused, said that when she was lobbying the legislature, that a former lawmaker made some very inappropriate comments to her, and now she wanted to come forward because he is being considered for the state parole board, and she doesn't think that a person like that should be on the parole board. Jean Abdallah has denied all these accusations, and I believe Marty Jackley has said that the appointment will go on despite the uproar around it.
What's at stake here, Seth? How does this all play out, not only for Jean Abdallah, but for Marty Jackley?
Well, I think, you know, Jackley's comments are the ones I've really honed in on because, you know, there's been an accusation made by Tiffany Campbell. Jean Abdallah denies it. I guess all we can do there is read the reporting on it and make up our own minds. But when you look at what Marty Jackley was quoted as saying, and it was the Argus Leader's reporting, he said that if Senator Abdallah made such a comment, it would be inappropriate. But Senator Abdallah has denied making the comment. And that was the end of the quote. And, you know, in the climate we're in, as we all, you know, wake up this morning and hear that, you know, Matt Lauer has been fired and is the latest in this seemingly never-ending string of people, you know, coming under allegations of sexual harassment and sexual assault. I think we would all expect a little less dismissiveness probably from somebody who's in a position to either appoint or not appoint somebody or recommend somebody for appointment. In this case, Mr. Abdallah has been appointed to the State Board of Pardons and Paroles. So I think there is, and of course with Marty Jackley running for governor and, you know, being a public official and being under scrutiny, I think there's a lot at stake here as far as when people make accusations in peer at the state capitol in that environment when women come forward to make an accusation. Will they be taken seriously? Will they be believed? Will it be investigated at all? I think that's what's at stake here. Is that right now there seems to be an attitude of dismissiveness and saying, well, you know, whatever, and life goes on. And, you know, it just seems that, especially in the climate we're in, there ought to be at least some formal look at this to see if you know, to try to weigh these allegations.
And, Roger, I'm wondering how much the response from Jean Abdallah has made a difference. And, again, I'm referencing Dana Ferguson's report in the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, where she has quoted Jean Abdallah as saying she, as in Tiffany Campbell, can go to hell. He puts his background up against what she's saying, and then he says, if she'd spent as much time trying to keep her family together, maybe she'd still have them now, and he's referring to her divorce. What about his reaction to this, which seems to be a pretty personal attack on former ACLU lobbyist Tiffany Campbell?
Yeah, that was, I feel the same way with Seth. When I read Marty Jackley's comments, I was a little surprised. When I read his response to it, I was a little surprised, too. I think it goes to show that in these kind of situations, we can't expect the legislative body itself to police itself in here. We need some kind of independent investigation of these because I think it's been shown in other states, too, that... Mm. That when these accusations arise in a legislature, that the legislatures can't be trusted to do the investigations themselves. So they'll try to cover it up and get their buddy off the hook. So we definitely need some kind of system where independent people can look at these accusations and try to do something about it.
Seth, you think this plays out in peer this legislative session somehow? I mean,
yeah,
beyond this specific instance, but, you know, from a broader, you know, broader sweeping changes or conversations during this session?
Well, I think the broader impact of it depends on the specific impact. I think, as I understand the process, there, you know, Mr. Abdallah will have to be confirmed by the legislature, this appointment. And so there'll be an opportunity there, obviously, to air this out, this issue. And like I said, if this is just swept under the rug and ignored, I guess it'd be awfully tough for anybody to come forward with similar allegations in the future and believe that they'll be taken seriously or even offered any kind of due process on it. And, you know, that's to say nothing of, you know, look, it's important to say, I don't know what happened here. You know, there's an allegation and there's a denial. But again, given the allegation, given that this is a person who is you know, up for appointment to a public board, and given the climate that we're in of heightened awareness of sexual harassment, things of that nature, it does seem that there ought to be some, at least some kind of, you know, formal review of this rather than just a dismissive, you know, saying, well, he denied it and that's that. I think we all realize that just being accused of something and then, you know, a denial isn't an absolute. you can't just say next time I'm picked up for speeding, I don't think I can just deny it and then it's over, right? So, I mean, I think there's a lot riding on it that, you know, do we have a culture out there that's going to, you know, weigh out these allegations and try to at least come to some kind of reasoned conclusion? Or do we have a culture that just dismisses it out of hand and moves on?
Let's jump to the national stage, but with the same topic, because U.S. Senator John Thune has suggested that President Trump uses influence to sort of encourage Republican Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore to step aside. John Thune wades into the fray a little bit, Roger, and I think everybody knows, unless you are unsure, Roy Moore has been accused of a variety of you know, cases of sexual misconduct, including pursuing teenagers when he was in his 30s for relationships. And I'm wondering, Roger, your thoughts on Senator Thune stepping up and telling the president, use your influence.
Well, it was great. After reading the previous story about the lobbyist and the lawmaker allegations and having my head spinning over it, to go and read this story, and it was it was good. You know, it made me think, well, good for you, John Thune, you know, standing up to the president, standing up to a lot of Republicans, even after these allegations against Ray Moore were made public. He's still leading the polls among people in Alabama. You know, and I see that and think, what is wrong with people? You know, this is ridiculous. But it was very heartening to see John Thune stand up and do the right thing and say the right thing on national TV, standing up for what's right. Good for him.
And Seth, you have an article on RapidCityJournal.com. You can find it online if you don't subscribe. And it's really talking about Senator Thune and his war chest and his campaign committee and his contributions. He's got some cred right now. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I looked into it because there have been a couple of the candidates for U.S. House have been making some noise about their fundraising and talking about how well they've been doing, et cetera. And sometimes it can be more interesting to look at the politicians that aren't up for re-election. What are they doing with their campaign finances? In this case, looked up John Thune's latest campaign finance reports for latest, you know, a quarter of fundraising that passed on the FEC, Federal Elections Commission website. And, of course, we've all known for a long time he's got a ton of money. He's got like $11 million on hand in his campaign committee right now. But when I was scrolling through sort of the finer detail, you know, I noticed that the total amount of money he took in was actually greater than the contributions he'd received. I thought, well, what is going on there? And there's a line that says interest and dividends, and that was $151,000 roughly. And I thought, can that be true? And it was. And so I dug into it a little bit further. And he collected during the last quarter of fundraising $151,000 from interest and dividends on investments. He's invested some of his campaign money, and he made that much money just off investments. While, on the other hand, and he doesn't face election, you know, he's not up for election next year. Meanwhile, the leading U.S. House candidates on the Republican side, Dusty Johnson and Chantel Krebs, each raised from contributors somewhere around $130,000 during the same quarter. Upshot being, you know, he's taken in more money just off off interest and dividends than other people are actually bringing in from, you know, contributors. So it's an indication of the heights he's risen to, I guess. And
Roger, I love how Seth sort of revealed one of those, you know, classic journalist moments where you say, can that be true?
and then
you start digging.
The most amazing
How many stories about, have begun that way?
And the most amazing thing about that story is that the candidates that that Thune is out raising just by doing nothing are not, you know, fringe candidates. We're talking,
right,
popular, well-known people in the Republican Party with name recognition. I mean, these are heavy hitters, and they're still not raising as much money as John Thune is by doing absolutely nothing. It's pretty incredible.
All right, so Seth, put this in context a little bit, because people are still giving him money. Why? And there's some skeptics in the state who now are saying, you know, he took so much money from so-and-so, and what does that mean for, you know, his behavior? And so put it into context, you know, what does his influence really mean right now? And how is it revealed through the amount of money he's able to raise?
Yeah, and it's important to remember, it wasn't as though somebody just wheeled up and gave him $11 million, you know.
Right.
One of the main reasons he has that much money is it's been 13 years since he had a competitive race. I mean, you have to go all the way back to 2004 when he ousted Tom Daschle from the Senate. That was, you know, so he's had 13 years to raise money and not have to spend hardly any of it. So, and during that 13 years, he's risen to the number three leadership position in the Senate as chairman of the Senate Republican Conference. He's been in the Senate long enough and risen high enough on the ladder to chair the Senate Commerce Committee. So because of that, he not only is popular in South Dakota and gets donations there, but across the country, people with money and power recognize that this is a guy who's in a position to move the levers of power in Washington. So I want to give this guy money and see what he can do for me. So he's been able to raise money from a wide variety of people and interest groups from all over the country. And when you can do that, and then you never have to spend any of it, you know, remember one year he had nobody run against him. And the next time he was up for re-election, he won by more than 40 percentage points. So it's a combination of longevity, leadership, influence, and it's put him in some rare air, because according to what I found on the FEC website, the only two federal level candidates anywhere that has more money on hand than him are Donald Trump and Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts.
Hmm. So that tells us something. Does it tell us about where he could go next?
Yeah, you know, I asked John Schaff, who's a great political science professor at Northern State University, for his take on that. And he speculated that Senator Thune might be, you know, angling for the leadership of the Senate someday. In other words, Mitch McConnell's job as Senate Majority Leader, if that ever comes open. And, of course, you know, you never know that they could be in the majority or the minority in coming years. We don't know that. But there seems to be some support for that. Last year, Senator Thune gave $2 million from his campaign committee to the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee to support other Republicans who are running for the Senate. So as John Schaff at Northern State said, you know, he's kind of got this big storehouse of favors that he can hand out and cash in later if there comes a time when the leadership job is open and he wants to rise to that position.
You can find the full article at RapidCityJournal.com. Seth Tupper, Enterprise reporter and political reporter for the Rapid City Journal. Thanks so much for being here, Seth.
Thank you.
Roger Whittle, managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. Thanks for being here as well. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.